Right, now, Men Have Rights Too is a charity working with male victims of domestic violence and abuse and their families. And the charity is going to be holding the first of a few training sessions for professionals working with domestic abuse tomorrow. That's the 11th of April at the Mary Green Manor Hotel in Brentwood. Now, Gerald Cash is the founder of Men Have Rights Too. He's here with me in the studio, and I had hoped to have Erin Pitsey on the phone, but unfortunately, she's engaged, so we can't talk to her at the moment. So anyway, Gerald is organiser of this event. Perhaps I could ask you to tell us a little bit about why Men Have Rights Too came into being and what its aims are.
Yes, well, a few years ago, I started studying to become a counsellor, and research showed me that there were lots of facilities to help females, but there were virtually none for males. So as a result of that, I made more inquiries and more inquiries and did more research and eventually set up a charity to help men.
Now, this particular event, I think you mentioned on the phone to me last night, it's actually a series of events, so you've got quite a few of them coming up.
Yes, I've been very fortunate to have got some funding from the National Lottery to enable me to put on six events over the next 12 months.
Oh, that's very good. So sort of basically one every other month, or isn't it going to work quite like that?
Yes, basically one every other month.
Yeah. And are they all going to be in this area?
Yes, six of them will be. There'll be others in the London area, yes.
Now, the training session that you're going to be holding tomorrow, what exactly is going to be happening there?
Well, we'll be talking about awareness, raising awareness about the male victim, the risks that are peculiar to men and fathers, the effects on children and relatives involved. Often children may be considered, but often relatives and friends of those affected are just not considered. And also recognising and working with male victims. Yes, that's what we're doing.
Right. Now anyone who's interested in this field is welcome to go along. Can they still get tickets for the event tomorrow? Is it too late now?
Not for tomorrow's event.
No,
not for tomorrow's event. But the other events, yes, you can check on the website, which is www.menhaverights2.co.uk, and there'll be notices on there of future training sessions, yeah.
Right. Now, okay, let's go on from that. Now, one of the things which I believe that you have as something very important attached to this is to do with the legal side and supporting legal.
Yes.
Supporting people legally. Just exactly what is that and how does it work?
Well, it's called Mackenzie Friend. And what it is, legal aid ended last April, a year ago, for family court matters. So now if you go to the family court for things like divorce, residency, contact matters, you have to pay the full fee of a solicitor unless you can show there's domestic violence. That's quite difficult for a man to prove. Sadly, there are cases where there have been false claims made, and it's much easier for those claims to be acted on immediately where it's the male that's being accused. There's a whole variety of reasons for that. I don't want to get into that now because it's quite long-winded. Now, a Mackenzie Friend is someone who can give assistance to men and women. I have two female clients I'm currently working with in the family court. And it helps with filling in forms, the appropriate forms, the wording of the forms, the court protocol, what to do on the day, how to address people in the court. And also it can give advice before the client has to answer questions or ask questions. The Mackenzie Friend can be consulted, so you can give advice there. Rarely, the Mackenzie Friend can be given permission by the judge to speak on behalf of the client, but that is rare.
You say it's called Mackenzie Friend. What exactly is that? It's not actually an individual, is it?
Well, it was at one time.
Oh, I see. Oh, right.
And that established the case law that somebody who is not legally qualified can enter the courtroom and act as a support, moral support. And it's gone on from there. But now there are training courses, and I've been on a training course to train me to be a Mackenzie Friend. So, yeah, there are. And I've got got a network, because the helpline, the Men Have Rights helpline, is nationwide, and we befriend people all over the place. But I also have a network of Mackenzie friends. So although I work in this area, I've got other Mackenzie friends all over the country that I can call on to help people.
Now, when you talk about domestic violence, in particular where it's affecting men, it isn't necessarily physical violence, is it? I imagine it could be psychological.
Yes, a lot of the... well, you see, if you talk about violence, one immediately thinks of hitting, physical. But abuse can be actually more long-lasting emotionally than a black eye or a broken arm. And so the emotional damage can be far more serious, more long-lasting, yes.
Now, men tend to be portrayed as the evil perpetrators and women as innocent victims, but it is a lot more complicated than that, isn't it?
Yes, a lot more. And don't forget that quite a lot of domestic violence is reciprocal.
Yeah.
So it's not all one direction.
Yeah, quite.
There may well be retaliation, and of course that gets overlooked as well, because it tends to focus on just the victim, not on two people. There's an also more in that, because if the focus is only on the victim, then the person who is the perpetrator is overlooked.
Yes.
Apart from being persecuted.
Yes, yes.
And so when those two people, the victim and the perpetrator, enter into new relationships, the patterns that have got them in the violent relationship in the first place are likely to be repeated. So it's important to deal with both victim and perpetrator in domestic violence cases, often overlooked, of course.
Well, yeah, I can imagine it would be. Now, I know when we look at statistics, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics, some of which purport to show that whilst one in four women experience domestic violence, so do one in six men. But charities like Women's Aid, I believe, call the figures misleading, claiming that they're based on single incidents of a criminal nature without regard to the severity of the violence or whether or not it's repeated. Are there any reliable statistics by gender as to the proportion of perpetrators, male or female?
My initial reaction to that is no.
Right.
Because
it's almost impossible, I imagine.
It is impossible, because so many people don't report. That's men and women don't report. More women do report than men, though. So even if you take the line that women report more readily than men, you're still not getting an accurate number of the number of incidents.
Right.
Now, there's over 200 studies, independent studies, research studies done since the end of the 1970s, which show that men are actually more frequently abused in domestic violence situations than women. But I don't think that statistic would go down too well. So it's not one that's...
People don't always want to believe the truth.
Well, there is that as well, if it is the truth, yeah. But there's over 200 studies, and I can quote all the references for those. Not off by heart.
No, well, I wouldn't expect you would. No.
The government statistics, however, they estimate 1.2 million women per year, 800,000 men per year. So... in the current level of support available, that equates to an awful lot of men who don't have any support. 800,000. Now, is that totally insignificant? Does that warrant no male services in Essex, for example? Or maybe, I think we have got some services in Essex, but they tend to be like one afternoon a week for a couple of hours or something. So we haven't got a purely, totally dedicated service working for men, apart from Men Have Rights Too.
So why is it, do you think, that there is so little help for males who suffered from domestic violence or abuse?
One big reason is the macho image.
Right.
It is not cool to say you've been hit by a woman, and it's not cool to say you can't stand up for yourself. You know, the men... Men are disposable, basically. Our society regards men as disposable. Women and children first. Men are standing in the front line when there's a dispute somewhere. You know, you've got to be brave, stand up for it, you know, and not show your emotions, because that's weakness.
Yes.
And so on and so on. So men don't readily come forward to say they have been hurt. They don't readily come forward to say their emotions have been damaged either, because that's all weakness.
So what needs to happen, do you think, to raise the awareness and provide more help for men?
Give them the ability, give them somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. First of all, they need to feel safe, that they're not going to be laughed at and ridiculed, which is often the case, even among friends. Mm-hmm. It would be, what, you can't take care of this? What, you let your woman hit you? That's incredible. So they're ridiculed, so they're not going to say anything. So,
well, as you say, it's not necessarily physical. It could be be psychological, which can, as you were saying earlier, be worse.
Yes. Well, I can imagine women will be hopping up and down listening to me. But yeah. Anyway, I'm going to say one more thing, which is going to probably not endear me to the opposite sex. I have many, many cases where men phone up and say they're totally distraught. They want to see their children, mm-hmm. and they can't. There's a court order in place, mm-hmm. but the ex doesn't comply. And there's no way they can go against the ex's wishes, demands. Mm-hmm. They can't just go around there. As soon as they phone more than three times, they can get accused of being of harassing. If they go around there, they can take out a non-molestation order to stop the man from going around to the house. There's a lot of bias against the male, and it can be very, very distressing, emotionally destroying for a man who loves his children, and he can't see them.
Does this abuse affect men of a particular age, or is it right across the board?
Oh, we're back to statistics again.
Well, no, it's not really statistics. I mean, I would imagine that from your experience, you would have a bit of an idea as to whether it's younger men or whether it's when they get older and retired or whatever.
Well, statistically, between 16 and 35, men and women are at greater risk of domestic violence incidents. Mm-hmm. The older you get, the less risk you are at it. However, my experience of the helpline is I get mostly people who are late 30s, mm-hmm. middle-aged, around about that time. Mm-hmm. Mostly.
Well, look, good luck on the training session tomorrow, and also your continuing campaigns to combat domestic abuse of all kinds and to achieve that wider recognition that men are affected by this too. And thanks very much for talking to us today. What we will do, I'm going to do the news, and I will have one more crack at seeing if we can call Erin after that. So if you'd like to hold on, and we'll just see where we go with that.
Thanks very much.
In the meantime, that brings the time to 1:31. Right, now, all being well, I have Erin on the phone. Hello, Erin.
Hello, I'm here.
Ah, wonderful stuff, wonderful. Now, we were talking earlier on about what the event tomorrow, the Men's Have Rights To, is going to be all about. Now, you're going to be the guest speaker, so what exactly are you going to be telling everyone?
Well, I'm actually going to talk about men's position in domestic violence, because for a very long time, actually from the beginning when I opened the refuge in 1971, I was always aware that it was never a gender issue. That was a massive radical feminist lie in order to make profits for their own political ends, and I've been arguing with them and pointing out that actually it's a generational issue, so both children, boys and girls, are affected by domestic violence in the family, and either men or women can be violent. And now the international results of all research has proven to be exactly right, that in the private relationships between men and women, and women and women, and same sex if you like, you're violent because you were born probably into a very violent family and you never learned to change your patterns of behavior. And what happened is that for such a long time, it was all down to men, that all women were innocent victims of men's violence. And men have had an appalling time, both in the courts and through all the agencies, because they've always been held responsible for what happens. And now, of course, we're in a position where a woman only has to pick up a phone with no evidence at all, call the police, and she can have her partner removed. Mm-hmm. And if she claims that he has, there's no need for any domestic violence evidence. And this is the frightening part, because what's happened over these years is that men have lost their human right to be innocent until they're proven guilty. Once they're taken away by the police, they have to prove their innocence. And it's an appalling situation. Mostly what I'm going to want to talk about tomorrow is how men handle this kind of stress. Because one of the difficulties is that men are doers. So when they find themselves in a position where they are accused of things they haven't done, their first reaction tends to be to do too much, to talk too much, to write reams of stuff which they hand to social services. And before they know where they are, there's this one word that social workers use against man: you're controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And controlling means that is now actually a form of domestic violence.
Well, actually, that was one of the things we were talking about earlier on, was the fact that in many cases the domestic abuse doesn't necessarily have to be physical violence. A lot of it's psychological.
Well, this is the thing, you see, and what's happened in the last 40 years that I've been working in this field, police are largely getting called out to marital quarrels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become, I have fought against this because it has become so wide, the definition of domestic violence. Majority of couples should be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any logic, this is the kind of logic behind it. And it, and in a sense, what has to happen, and it is coming, you know, and this is the one thing that I am happy about, that for the first time in a very long time, we now have groups of men who are saying, this is enough, and men's rights activists are coming to the fore. And not in anger or hatred, because in all those movements, there are women also working, like myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's an online program called A Voice for Men, which I'm very much involved with. And that in men and women, to stop this for the sake of our children and for the sake of boys.
Mm-hmm.
Because the position for men and boys in our society is tragic at the moment.
Now, your involvement in the field of domestic abuse is a long and fascinating story. Obviously, it's too involved to get into today.
Mm.
But I believe as a hands-on worker in the field, you found that your work was quickly under attack from feminist ideologists. What on earth was all that about?
Well, exactly what I've been telling you, what happened from the very beginning. My mother was extremely violent, and my father was also. He was verbally violent and dysfunctional. And between my mother was the one who was much more physically violent, particularly to me, because I looked like my father. So when I opened the refuge by accident, I didn't intend to open a refuge, it was an advice centre.
Mm-hmm.
And the first women poured in. Of the first 100 women coming in, 62 were as violent or more violent than the men they left, and they were violent to their children. So I realised very quickly that you needed therapeutic communities for people who've been brought up in violent families and have never known anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the radical feminist attitude, you see, at that point, 1974, they were running out of money because it was no longer fashionable because they were too radical, and they were looking for a cause, and of course it was perfect. So all of a sudden, you had these huge headlines about innocent victims and men's violence, and they took over and created their own refuges across the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of them are run by feminists. Now, anyone in there, anyone going in, will be automatically told she's a victim. If she's attacked her partner, she'll be told it was in self-defense. No men can work in the refuges, and men are vital in refuges because that is sometimes for children, it's the first gentle men they've known.
Yes.
And no men can sit on the board, no men can be involved.
Dear.
And in some of the more radical ones, no men can come in under any circumstances, not the police, not a plumber. They have to find women plumbers. It's appalling. And it's a $1 billion industry now.
And this is international, is it?
This is international, yes. I'll be going to a conference in June to Toronto, which is probably, Canada is probably one of the most dominated by radical feminist country in the world. Then I will go down to Detroit to join them, A Voice for Men's conference, and women will be coming. But these will be men from all over the world, experts, world experts like Murray Strauss, Warren Farrell, all these people will be coming. We have to make this change for the future. I mean, I'm a mother, a grandmother, and a great-grandmother, and
yes.
I've got boys.
So how do you cope with that sort of attitude that's thrown at you? How do you deal with it?
It was really, in the beginning, it was really frightening because I would be picketed anywhere I went, and there'd be these women with banners saying, all men are rapists, all men are bastards, and heckling and screaming anywhere I went, and it became extremely difficult. But I have for me, in a sense, it's religious, in that I'm not pro organized religion, but I'm a lover of God in all his aspects, and I believe that we were all born in God's image, mm-hmm. and we are all lovable. And the work that I do is with people who are consumed by rage and hatred, and getting them to understand the roots of their violence. And to me, it's my path, if you like.
Right, now, I don't know, can we bring in Gerald here? Gerald, do you want to say anything to Erin at the same time?
How can I follow that? She said absolutely everything. I think it's just, yeah, she's got a wonderful way of saying basically what I've said, but she probably sounds more convincing than me.
Well, she's certainly going to be the star performer tomorrow,
oh, yes,
I would say.
Definitely. Yes.
Look, Erin, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. I'm glad we caught you in the end.
Oh, thank you.
And good luck with the training session tomorrow and your continuing work in this field.
Well, just hope I find my way there. I have the most terrible sense of direction. But Gerald, I will do my best. If not, I'll be ringing you off the M25 and crying.
Be thankful it's not today with the M25.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking when I was listening.
Well, I can tell you, I got stuck in it and I was getting more and more agitated because I knew I was due on here at 1 o'clock and I was stuck in traffic for an hour.
Oh no, don't!
So you've got that to look forward to
tomorrow.
That's all right. Thank you very much for talking
to
us. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye.